Hello and welcome to today's podcast of NALAW, where we discuss and simplify the laws and articles in the Constitution of Uganda. In Uganda today, gun killings have become rampant, and this creates a threat to Ugandan lives, and there have been a number of assassinations due to the misuse of arms. Some of these murders, we have the shooting that led to the death of Andrew Felix Kawes in 2007, who was the Assistant Inspector General of Police. The attempted murder of General Katumba Wamala, 1st June 2021, as well as the most recent assassination of the social media blogger Ituli Oraxis, and many more. And yes, we are diving into the legal aspect of the misuse of firearms, and here to put into a very simpler context for us and our audience to understand it is Counsel Ronald. In the studios, welcome, Counsel Ronald.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yes, you're going to say hello to us and introduce yourself in a better way possible so that we really get to know you.
My name is Ronald Okirin. I'm a lawyer working with LegalMark Advocates, and I'm delighted to be on the podcast to share insights today on the Firearms Act in general and the regulations that we must understand in a simple manner.
Ronald, first and foremost, I would like to find out the meaning of these words, all these terms, firearm, and some examples, as defined by the Constitution of Uganda.
First of all, it's important to know that the Constitution generally gives us the position of the law, but then it does not delve into the specifics of the different laws, because laws are numerous. You know, we have over 200 laws that are in force. So what we just know from the Constitution is it is the supreme law of the land. But then under the Constitution, our parliament is given power to make other laws that are known as principal legislations. So in this case, the relevant principal legislation for regulation of firearms is the Firearms Act, CAP 299. That's really the relevant law that we have to look at in as far as firearms is concerned. So from a simple definition of a firearm, just relates to any weapon that has the capacity to shoot a bullet or capable of releasing a missile. That's really from the act. And for use or misuse of a firearm, we just need to follow the literal interpretation from the English language. If you have a firearm and you misuse the same, then you're likely to be convicted under the act. But I know we're going to delve into that very shortly.
Okay. So actually, this brings me to this question. What are the legal definitions of the terms such as possession, use? Yes, you talked about misuse, but as pertained by the Firearm Act.
It's important to note that the Firearms Act does not specifically define a possession of a firearm, but again, we borrow from other laws in order to interpret a possession, and this is really interpreted in the literal manner, the literal sense of the word.
Sure.
To possess is to hold, to own a firearm in this instance. And I think just to track back a bit, you had asked for examples of firearms. The Act doesn't exactly delve into the specifics of the different guns or firearms, but we know from, you know, police records that this would include, you know, guns such as the AK-47, that's, I'm sure, is very common. Then we also have the shorter and smaller guns, the pistols. Those would be some of the examples of firearms that we need to be mindful about.
Okay, thank you, Ronald. So if I may ask for my audience to understand, who are the legalized people or persons to hold firearms?
You see, the thing is that in Uganda, unlike countries like the United States, where ownership of guns has been liberalized, in the US, you'll find so many civilians owning guns, and that's why gun violence is very rampant in the US, because we normally hear of stories of a gunman walking into a classroom and shooting students aimlessly. That's all caused because of the liberalization of the guns. Then we've also seen the gangs in the US also fighting each other because of ownership of guns. I think, as you pointed out in the opening, we've seen that in Uganda there's been an increased use of firearms. You know, recently we saw an Indian businessman being
gunned
down by a police officer. But specifically, to answer your question, firearms are highly regulated in Uganda. And these are regulated under the Firearms Act, that first of all appoints a chief licensing officer who is in charge of granting certificates, firearm certificates. So it's important for the viewers to appreciate that in Uganda you cannot own a firearm unless you have a duly licensed certificate. Very, very important. And this is vested under the office of the chief licensing officer, that has the discretion or the power to either accept or reject an application for a firearm.
And then what do they base on to accept or reject giving you the firearm?
I think that's a very interesting and valid question. They have numerous considerations that are informed by the regulation on firearms, but then also the policies that the police has set up in place. Well, of course, firstly, you must comply with payment of the requisite fees, the number of fees that are involved before you apply for these licenses. Of course, first of all, the first form that a person will have to fill in is Police Form 98, and other numerous payments that must be made. However, payment of money in itself is not sufficient. There must be proof of training in usage of a firearm.
Okay.
Very, very important. In case someone has no proficiency in use of a firearm, then they must go for at least 2 months training conducted by the police before they can allow them to make that application. So those are really among the considerations. But then even the police may want to ask themselves, or the chief licensing officer, is what is the reason for purchasing this firearm? So that will inform their decision whether to accept or reject the same. I don't know if that really draws more light onto the aspect of the application. So the key takeaway here is you must have a valid
written
license certificate in order to own a firearm, and the police is duty bound, if they find someone in possession of a firearm, to inquire if that person indeed has a certificate. Of course, we're going to look at the implications if someone is found without that certificate. It's punishable under the law, but I know we're going to get there subsequently.
And that was my next question. What are the circumstances?
Yeah, well, first of all, again, it's important to go to the Firearms Act under Section 3. We see that it is an offence to possess or use a firearm without having a valid firearm certificate. If any person is found in possession of a firearm without the certificate, then they are liable on conviction to imprisonment for a term not exceeding 10 years, or to a fine not exceeding 60 currency points, or both. Of course, we know that one currency point is equal to 20,000. So in order for you to find how much liability 60. Financially would have to be 60 times 20,000.
Okay.
Of course, the money doesn't really seem a lot, mm-hmm. but then in terms of the potential years that you may spend in prison, then you may need to think about whether you need to carry a gun or any other firearm without a license.
Then this brings me to this question. I mean, we have seen people being shot dead, but we don't understand who owns these guns and how does the police actually find out that today the shooting was done by this gun and this belongs to this person. Like, how do they find out?
Yeah, again, Daisy, it's important to note that, again, getting back to what we mentioned earlier, is this process is highly, highly regulated. There are checkpoints everywhere because the certificate that a person obtains will reflect the type of firearm that someone possesses. You know, you cannot have a certificate of allowing someone to hold a pistol, then you're found with an AK-47. There'll be an issue there. And the police, through the chief licensing officer, has records of every person, every individual that owns a firearm. So in the event that a firearm has been used in committing an offense, police can easily trace by, you know, looking at the make of the gun that has, based on witness accounts, or even the bullets will be material. You know, the forensic officers will be able to establish and draw a possible pattern of where the perpetrator could be at by just simply looking at the nature of gun that has been used. But I know we ought to have highlighted this. It's important for the viewers to know that under the Firearms Act, police officers of the Uganda Police and the Uganda People's Defense Forces are exempted from holding a license under this act. So for them, really, the regulation is not under this act, because they're entitled to hold by nature of their position and their duties in provision of security. You know, whether they have used those firearms to commit atrocious crimes is another conversation. Of course, we've been seeing lately police officers, not civilians, but police officers using
the army.
Yeah, even in the past, we've seen army officers using guns to murder people, innocent people, in cold blood. Of course, there is accountability under the different laws, under the Penal Code Act. If a police officer or an army person uses a gun in a manner that he or she ought not to, then they will be liable for different offenses, including murder, and they will be imprisoned upon conviction. So it's important for us to put it out there. So essentially, the Firearms Act is dealing with citizens and other persons who may feel the need to own or transact in the business of selling firearms.
Okay, so we talked about the consequence of if an army or a sole police officer use the firearm or misuse the consequences. So I want to find out if you're convicted of the firearm misuse according to the Constitution of Uganda, what happens?
Yeah, well, first of all, it would depend on the offense that someone has committed. For instance, if someone is found without a license and yet they have firearm, then and they are a civilian, then they will be charged under the Firearms Act for a minimum of 10 years imprisonment. Yeah, but then if someone has used the gun to commit murder, then on top of the 10 years, they will also be considered for murder. So that increases the number of years someone may be liable. So whereas a police officer does not need to own a license under this act, they cannot afford to misuse a firearm because they will also be potentially liable. I'll just give you one illustration under the act. Section 31 of the Firearms Act prohibits carrying of a firearm while someone is drunk or disorderly. In the event that a person is found intoxicated by alcohol and they're carrying a Firearms Act, it's taken that they are a danger to the community
and
to themselves as well. Because, I've seen scenarios of, a police officer getting back maybe home when he or she is intoxicated. Mostly the gentleman, really, to say this respectfully. I've seen mainly the male officers, they come back home and they end up causing damage to even their own children because of the state of intoxication that they are in. So they will be liable under the act. But then again, if they end up committing murder or attempted murder, then they'll also be considered under the Penal Code Act. So it's important for us to make that very clear.
So what steps can a person take to prevent an intentional or accidental firearm? And what are the legal responsibilities of the firearm owner?
I think that there are two limbs to your question. The first limb is what steps must be taken to ensure that firearms are used in a proper manner.
Yes.
And of course, while answering that, it's important for us to also highlight what the public can do in order to prevent themselves from dealing with individuals who do not have licensed firearms. Of course, we know that individuals and the community needs to be vigilant. We have seen in public places posters and signs clearly stating that firearms are not allowed. We've seen that in schools, as you enter the gate, they'll check you thoroughly to ensure that you do not possess a firearm that could be a danger to the public. So in the event that the security personnel in the public place finds a person with a firearm, the next inquiry is going to be, do you have a valid firearm certificate? In the event that you do not have, then the security personnel will be duty bound to present you before the police and criminal prosecution and proceedings will start at that point. Then the second limb that we must address is, what must a person who holds a valid firearms certificate and firearm do in order to prevent the public from potentially facing murder or other heinous acts as a result of firearms? Well, of course, we know that you cannot just use a firearm to shoot people aimlessly. So there's a need of respect, there's a need of restraint. Already highlighted that you cannot carry a firearm whilst you are intoxicated, because you're causing and bringing a danger to the public. So in the event that even if someone has a valid license to carry a gun, you must still be respectful. It can only be used under very, very strict and very minimal circumstances.
Where I want to find out, in what case should someone shoot a fellow human being?
And well, that gets down to intention, the intention behind. Because in law, we have two things that are very crucial before someone is convicted for any offense.
Okay.
One is mens rea, which is the intention of the mind. Does the mind want to commit that offense? Mm. Then actus reus is the act of doing what the mind has intended to do. So those are normally very crucial before someone is found guilty of any particular offense. So in a case of murder, the court will first need to be convinced that the accused person had both the intention and did the actual act of shooting a person to death. So that's really a key consideration. But then you asked, what instances may a person be justified in using a firearm, if I understood correctly? Well, some of the considerations may be in self-defense. For instance, someone has been attacked by armed robbers and they have no option but to use a firearm to protect themselves. But even in usage of that firearm, the intention should never be to kill, because there are some body parts that a person knows that if they shot them, a person would immediately die. Or even the number of times a person is shot at, because you cannot say that you're defending yourself if you end up shooting someone 10 times. I think we're familiar with the story of Oscar Pistorius, an Olympic athlete in South Africa, who was convicted of murdering his wife, and claiming in his claim he said that he was shooting an intruder, but then the court looked at the evidence that he shot multiple bullets, so that would not have been self-defense in that instance.
True.
So court is going to look at all the circumstances that are involved before they can rightly say that you were acting
out of
in
defense.
Self-defense. Yeah, but then even before we close this off, it's important to note that under the Firearms Act, intention is not necessary. Mens rea is not necessary. This is what is termed as a strict liability offense. So unlike in other offenses where the duty is on the prosecution to prove that indeed someone has committed an offense, under the Firearms Act, the duty is on the accused person to ascertain or verify that indeed they have not committed an offense. An example would be that if you are found in possession of a gun, it's not on the police, it is not on the prosecution to prove that you are not entitled to hold that gun. It is upon you to provide evidence, in this case, a valid firearm certificate indicating that you have the authority to hold that gun. So the reason why it's a strict liability offense is because of the nature and the implications of holding a firearm, because the harm it could potentially cause to the public. So indeed, there are safeguards in that place to ensure that people do not misuse. And in the event that someone uses a firearm, the parameters are very clear and someone must comply with the same before they are acquitted of any possible offense.
So, Councillor Ronald, recently the police actually issued that people can hire guns at 20K. Per day, if you want to use it. Is that constitutionally legal? Isn't it creating harm in our society? Because that's a small amount of money.
Because I believe I saw that report recently, but then we must always state that there is misinformation out there.
Okay.
And I know we are, you know, doing some work in the media. We're trying to simplify the law in the media, but then the media has also been very guilty for spreading
misinformation.
Mm. Of course, for attractiveness, they'll just put out a story that, oh, you can get a firearm at 20,000. But then sometimes we need to go behind the headlines to interrogate what are actually the facts that we need to be mindful of. Because first of all, we've stated that the process of owning or possessing a firearm must be regulated under the Firearms Act and the regulations made thereunder. Of course, we've already highlighted the need for the training, but then there are other ancillary costs that will be involved. So to answer your question, it is really beyond the 20,000. That would be misinformation, because the public should know that there are other costs involved. The reason why police has introduced such mechanisms is for raising of revenue for the government, you know, in requirement with the budget. But that does not mean that the regulations for possession and usage of a firearm are not going to be complied with.
All right. My second last inquiry from you. What happens if someone's gun was stolen and misused? Does he get convicted and remanded according to the law? Do they look for who used it? What happens to him?
Of course, it's important for us to look at what are the circumstances. But even before looking at the circumstances, as a person who possesses a firearm, you have accountability to ensure that that firearm is not going to be used for very dangerous acts, such as uncontrolled shooting of civilians or security personnel. So in the event that you possess a firearm and that firearm has been used by another person to commit an offense, with or without your authority, the obligation is on you to ascertain and prove that you did not have any role whatsoever. And we know that in criminal prosecutions, there's that presumption of innocence. So in the event that a person fails to prove that they did not authorize, that they just stole their gun, then they're likely to be liable in that instance. But of course, it's important to look at the circumstances that are involved.
So for example, I have an example, because I was still young, but then I saw someone who was a soldier, a UPDF soldier, had a gun and they were cleaning it. So the daughter was actually in front of him. So he was cleaning the gun and by mistake shot the daughter. I want to find out what would happen to such a person. It was not intentional. He didn't intend to kill someone. He was actually cleaning the gun. So the daughter comes in and by mistake the daughter is shot and she dies. What does the law say about that?
Well, if someone dies and the death has been caused by another person, there are two possible offenses. The first offense is murder, then the second offense is manslaughter. Of course, the prosecution is always going to start with murder because it attracts a heavier punishment. But the standard of proving murder is much higher.
Sure.
Because for the prosecution to successfully convict an accused person, it must prove that the murder was occasioned with malice aforethought. So in answering your question, in your illustration, the prosecution in that instance would have to prove that the father had the intention, he acted with malice in shooting his daughter. Of course, that may be very, very difficult to prove in such circumstances, because, you know, he could claim accident, that, you know, he was just cleaning the gun. So in the alternative, such a person may be convicted of manslaughter, which doesn't really require intention, but there is an element of negligence. So in that scenario, there is clear negligence. Where would you clean a gun, you know, in front of like another person? So you cannot say that that person is going to walk away scot-free, but, you know, ultimately court has the discretion to review the evidence on the record before they can authoritatively come up with either a conviction or an acquittal.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much. My last question. Briefly, just explain for us in a very brief manner what the Firearm Act entails, covering it all up.
Well, for us to understand the purpose of any law, the first place to go to is the long title of the law. Because laws have long titles that normally stipulate the intention why Parliament enacted or drafted a particular law. That's always the first place we're going to go to if we need a simple reason why a particular act has been passed. But if we need a more detailed reason or reasons, then we may need to look at the parliamentary Hansards to read the debate that happened in the House as parliamentarians deliberated on whether a particular law and was needed in the first place. Then also a review of the different provisions, because they do not just pass a law without debating the same. So there must be a basis. And laws are normally there to cure a lacuna in the law. A lacuna is a gap or an existential problem. So for instance, before a Firearms Act is passed, maybe there were murders that were happening, you know, because of possession of a firearm. So Parliament deems it fit that, you know what, we may actually need a law in the first place.
True.
Yeah, but then for the Firearms Act in particular, this act commenced in 1970, on 1st December 1970. However, we saw an amendment in 2006. So, and that amendment guides us on the long title. We see that this is an act to amend and consolidate the law relating to regulation, firstly, control, manufacture, import, export, sell, repair, storage, and possession of firearms and any other connected matters therewith. So that really forms the intention. So really, it came into place, even the different amendments, to ensure that the process of acquisition of a firearm is highly regulated because of the existential threat that it poses to members of the public.
All right, great insights. Thank you so much, Kansuruna, for joining us today. And of course, making sure that our audience really is aware about the laws that govern them. Today we were talking about the Firearm Act, and of course, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you so much for listening in. Do you have any last words?
This is just really a call to the public to be very vigilant, because we've seen the recent events that have resulted from usage of firearms. So if you see an individual entering a public gathering possessing a firearm, you should immediately contact security personnel. It could be the police or the local council officials to ascertain whether this person indeed holds a license, because the duty is upon the public to ensure that accountability and safety is achieved and attained for everyone.
Of course, thank you so much. They always say that your safety becomes the first priority when it comes to your life and the people around you. Thank you so much, Councillor Ronald. Till next time, Nalo, know the law.